You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great work.
This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gaffer and Hooligan, available on Red Nation Online, War Room Sports Podcast Network, and FatsRadio.com. I'm your host, Kamal Hilton, joined by my co-host, Aaron Nielsen. How's it going, Aaron?
Good, Kamal.
And this week's pod, we have a few different interesting topics we're going to discuss. But just to give a quick overview before we start, in segment one, the first round, we're going to talk a little bit about playing the percentages. And what I mean by that is using stats and analytics and how stats and analytics are used both to manage a team financially as well as on-field performance. And we'll talk about that a little bit. Also, rags to riches stories. You see they're prevalent in boxing, but they seem to be fading away in soccer a little bit with the rise of academies, so I kind of want to get into that. And then in segment two, you brought an article to my attention about Football Manager video game being used to buy players.
Yeah, or scout players, yeah.
And scout players, so we'll talk about that. And then to wrap things up, we have a topic of cross-branding between sports and whether that will bring in or could bring in more fans to MLS. And that was related to a couple of things I saw on the internet that I'll get into later. Let's kick it off with the playing percentages topic. And this was brought about with a discussion we had about basketball and baseball with the Moneyball book and movie, the Houston Rockets, and how they've dealt with their offseason and how their general manager, Daryl Morey, kind of deals with on-field performance and, you know, cap room and cap space. And also the Memphis Grizzlies hiring John Hollinger, a guy who was, like, I think a stats guy with ESPN that they brought on to deal with that. So I just want to know, generally, does this happen in MLS at all?
Well, it does in a sense. You know, I know that GMB for TFC was supposed to have a bit of history with that and worked with the league in terms of financial and stuff like that. It's just interesting because we're doing this after Kansas City easily beat Toronto in a game yesterday. And on Twitter, I mainly made reference that two goals were scored by my boy Tom Dwyer, who currently is on $70,000 a year, and then Sonny Said, who was another nice college guy with Michigan who attempted to go to Europe, never really got this opportunity, so basically came back to MLS with his tails between his legs, but is now proving to be a decent player, and he's on $50,000 a year. And in comparison, a player like Bradley or Defoe makes that money combined in one game. So, you know, in terms of Moneyball, you know, my analysis for the MLS is at the end of the season, it all depends on the quality of depth you have. So by being efficient in terms of the money you're paying players and giving yourself more room to add players, I think it's certainly beneficial to look at analytics and stuff like that. In terms of statistics, the difference is, and you know, this is a point that I've said on many occasions, statistics in baseball has been around 80 years or so like that, and basketball has at least been around 50 or 60 years. For the most part in soccer, it's been around 10, 15 years. So one of the things about Moneyball and the whole idea about on-base percentage and players who walk and stuff like that is you can recruit a team or develop a team based on specific statistics. Now, I believe, and I see work that I've certainly done and other people have done, that you can start doing this for soccer. But someone has to take that plunge. So for example, if you want to, let's say you develop a team with two good wingers who are able to cross the ball, and so you assign a forward who's, say, 6'5" and can head that ball in. As long as you're committed to that style of play, it can give you some benefit, right? Now the problem there is another team can counter that, and so you would have to counter that back, and so on and so forth. So I do eventually feel statistics will have a play. I just think we're too naive or too soon in that business right now.
Yeah, I think your example of Kansas City was the first team that kind of crossed my mind, but I looked at it slightly in a different way in how they have dealt with transferring players out and replacing those players. So they transferred out Kai Kamara to Middlesbrough, knowing they had Dom Dwyer to come in. They transferred out Roger Espinosa to Wigan, knowing they were going to bring in Oriol Rossell. Then they transferred him out, knowing they had a guy in there to replace him. And they seem to keep doing that. So they're doing it from a business perspective in making money off of transfers.
Yeah.
But also...
Well, it's interesting you say, because in the money of all perspective, because I think it's now in six seasons, Porto in Portugal has generated $500 million in sales, right? So, you know, I think Moneyball, although it's a cool word, I think it's kind of, it has more say towards soccer than it does with the other sports, because the other sports, you lose a player and that player goes, you get a draft pick or you get something for him. Or in soccer, you can actually, it's a open business market, right? And you can generate money from selling players and generating a profit from a player. So, you know, arguably or eventually, you know, you could say Porto's playing money ball better than anybody, right? Because no MLB team or no NBA team is making that much money off their players when their players leave the team. But in terms of statistics and stuff like that, I think, you know, the interesting thing is you bring up Kansas City. One of the things about Kansas City is I've met a few scouts for soccer in America, and a lot of them work for Kansas City. So they're actually scouting players at the PDL level, at the college level, where in other sports or other teams are not necessarily doing that. And the other problem with the MLS is at the league level. A lot of them have gone hooked up with corporations opposed to grassroots stuff. And so reality is what makes Dom Dwyer notice, what makes Sonny Said notice, is an awareness of soccer at a younger level within the country. And I don't think the MLS is at that level yet. So teams like Kansas City can take advantage of that. And that's the whole idea of Moneyball, taking advantage of what other teams can't do.
Two other teams that kind of come to mind that might be moving in this direction, I kind of see them moving in this direction, is Seattle Sounders with the whole DeAndre Yedlin thing. Now, what they do after DeAndre Yedlin, I don't know. Maybe you have an idea of who they're going to replace. But the other team is Real Salt Lake. Now, they chose to keep a lot of their core guys together to make another run at the Cup. But you know Javier Morales is not going to stay there very much longer, I don't think.
Okay.
And they're grooming Luis Gil to take that spot when he leaves. And then,
That's fine.
And then also, Kyle Beckerman, when they move him on, is probably like Carlos Salcedo.
Sure. No, there's certainly that. Now, again, when it comes to transferring players, I think it's as much as the league's decision, as much as the team decision, and just, again, you know, getting myself in hot water. I find it's funny that Yedlin went to Tottenham when the league and MLS and Toronto owns Tottenham $8 million for Defoe. So I think, you know, instead of cash being exchanged, I think players were exchanged in some sense of that. Now, one thing that the MLS needs to learn, and you know, a good story of this is Bradley Wright Phillips, is the whole transfer market is based on value and speculation. So if a player is sold for, now Yedlin is a $2.5 million player. And before he was sold for $2.5 million, we didn't know his value, right? So what MLS will do is they'll buy someone like Bradley Wright Phillips on free transfer. He'll score 18, 19, 20 goals this season, and then they'll try to sell him. They might try to sell him back to a championship team or back to England, or he might leave, right? And the MLS will complain like they did with Camilo when he went to Mexico. Hey, you know, that's our valuable player. We're not getting fair value for him. But the reality is his market value is free because that's how much the MLS paid for him. So this is another thing. If the MLS truly wants to get into the global transfer market, into the global world of soccer, paying out transfers, evaluating players, selling players for value is beneficial because it increases the value of your team and the value of those players.
So that's more from a business, I guess, perspective or a money management perspective. But from an on-field performance perspective, what's interesting to me is, like, teams like the Houston Rockets and Memphis Grizzlies in basketball, and I'm sure there's umpteen examples in baseball, they kind of design their systems based off of a where a player likes the ball best in basketball. Yeah. So if he shoots the corner three at 82%, that's where he's getting all of his shots. Majority of his shots are coming from there.
Yeah.
Do you see this happening in soccer or in
I see it to a point. I do have, you see it, you know, when it comes to global soccer, you do see it started out. You see players, you know, Gareth Bale is a good example of a player who was restricted into his positioning when he was younger, but then was given more freedom or given his choice to where he wants to stand and where he wants to play. And you know, he turned into a much greater player. We had the issue, or we've talked about in terms of draft, with the draft pick Newman, who New England picked, and we were happy that he was picked as high as he was. Now, he's a player in college who sort of did that. You know, he was a player in college who sort of stood at the 18-yard box and scored most of his goals by running in off the 18-yard box and then shooting from distance. And arguably, you know, now he's young, but New England hasn't used him as a sub, right? So they're not basing the team on that. Again, I think it's, you know, I think analytics might get there to a certain extent. And certainly, you know, if a player is open and says, this is what, you know, the Vio with Montreal, he's certainly vocal, saying this is where I want the ball and this is where I can score from. And again, I think that's good, right? When you develop, I would say in general, basketball is more of an individual sport, where once the player has the ball, he can choose to shoot and score, where soccer is still more of a team development thing. And you would say that formations and team development has more to do with that than individual choice, individual player choices.
I think that's a good place to leave that topic. I mean, we could go on for a long time on that topic if we wanted to. But this next topic, I think, is pretty interesting as well. And I titled it Rags to Riches Stories. So this came up in when I was having a discussion with Rick Evangelista, who is the RNO web guy. He does all the back-end stuff that you guys don't get to see on Red Nation Online. But we're talking about Mike Tyson and George Schivalo in two kind of completely different discussions. But basically, we were just talking about how good of a fighter they were and how they came up with hard lives, and especially with Tyson, you know, how hard of a life he's had. And that story is common in boxing. You'll have the kid coming from a poor area, literally has to fight to survive. Somebody takes an interest in him. In Tyson's case, it was Customato. They build him up. He becomes, you know, through the amateurs, and then he becomes a professional and he becomes world champion. That story is common. But I feel that type of story is kind of dying in soccer with the rise of academies. And what I mean by that is you don't hear that story of the poor kid, or, you know, the kid that really played soccer in the street all his life and learned to be creative with the ball and somebody takes an interest in him. They kind of bring him through the academy at that point, but he's still, you know, his base is that creativity he learned in the street, and then he becomes a professional player. I think that story's kind of dying.
No. Again, I do think, number one, that is a journalistic story, right? You know, arguably, if you look at professional boxing, well, we'll use boxing as an example, you know, one of the most greatest developer of boxers worldwide have been the American Olympic system and developing boxers in there. And so some come from poor areas and some come from, you know, more middle class areas. And arguably there's equally as successful and stuff like that, right? So the rags to riches is a boxing story, number one. You know, it's to sell pay-per-views. You know, but it's an interesting story. I think in soccer, you know, I was initially going to say the joke in soccer and MLS is rags to rags, but there is certainly stories of players who sort of, well, you know, number one, you know, if we're, you know, with what you agree with the MLS recruiting from other CONCACAF nations. Certainly countries in Central America are poorer and Caribbean are poorer than America, so in some sense their stories can be a somewhat rags to riches. You know, I guess if we were talking to the head office with League One Ontario, they would say that that is their story, that these guys are good enough to play in the MLS or close enough to be good enough to play in the MLS but are unrecognized. So they're a rags to riches story, because that's basically the rags to riches story, because it's not only that that player is given the opportunity, it's that player excels within that opportunity. And certainly in the States, you know, with the Hispanic community, you know, I did a 20 undervalued or undervalued players not in the MLS. And a lot of those were Hispanic players who, you know, it's funny because of that list I provided, the non-Hispanic players and even a couple of Hispanic players are actually doing quite well this year. They're still not in the MLS, but all the top teams in NASL and all the top teams in US Pro have players who I picked. The ones who have still been sort of pushed away or pushed down has been some of these American-Mexican-based players who were not even picked up by USL and NSL Pro and were actually very successful in their PDL team this year. So, you know, certainly you will have those stories, but again, I think ultimately you don't want those stories. Right? You want to give everybody a fair chance from beginning, and you want everyone to have a shot to do it. And in some sense, I think academies are good. I think certainly academies at the youth level, you know, for children under 12 and 15 are very good, right, to learn about the game, to get into the game. I'm a little skeptical about the academy for 17, 16, 17, 18-year-olds because, you know, yesterday Toronto played Kansas City, and Kansas City had a goalkeeper, Kempin, who, you know, had a okay game and stuff like that, but he's been a homegrown player for Kansas City for 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And in that time, he's been paid a salary of $60,000-$70,000 a year. So, you know, arguably the MLS spent $200,000-$250,000 on this player to get him to play 5 years later. And I don't know if that's good for the player, because I don't know if it motivates the player to be successful if he's going to get paid not playing. And it's, I don't think it's necessarily good for the league, because that money could be used elsewhere.
I would take a bit of an issue or disagree with you slightly about not wanting those stories. I think I want that story for me personally, because a good example of a rags-to-riches story in a sense is Clint Irwin.
Okay.
That was like a highly publicized one where, you know, he's eating ramen noodles and playing.
Well, and that's why I said the rags to rags, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the guys in the MLS are still, now it's getting better, right? But a lot of guys, you know, like arguably, you know, and I don't know Yedlin's history as a child, but arguably he's a rags to riches story, right? To make it through American Academy, to make it through Akron, to make it through Seattle, to make it through Tottenham, you know, and hopefully he excels at Tottenham, and then he'd be a great rakes, you know, he'd be a movie, you know, a Hollywood movie. Of course, yeah, no, I think they're great stories. And again, I think that, mentioning Kempin just a second ago, you know, I think you have to commend all these guys, right? Because all these guys are taking huge risks in their lives to hopefully make it big, where arguably, you know, they, most of them have just recently graduated from university, most of them could go off and work in, you know, a more comfortable job and stuff like that, and do something well in their career, right? So I think a lot of them are rags to riches story. But, you know, I know, you know, it's funny because I don't know if you had a chance to see these, but there's the Goal Trilogy movie, which is the rags to riches story, right?
I was just going to bring that up.
Okay. So, yeah. So there you go. So we are the rags to riches. But, yeah, no, it's fun. It's and as I said, to sell the story, and to be honest with you, as I said, I think a lot of these guys, you would sell the story like that, that these guys fought very hard and struggled through adversity to get to where they are today.
Yeah.
Amal's a rags to riches story.
Yeah, like I mean, maybe I'm living in a fantasy land, and like maybe we won't see stories like that, like the Goal Trilogy, like you're talking about. Maybe that's like maybe too.
Well, I forget. There was recently, I think it's called The Beautiful Game, but there was recently on Netflix, if you have Netflix, but there's a documentary on African players trying to make it professionally. And there were some successful stories. Monteri was on there and a couple of successful ones. But there's also sad stories of guys who basically risked everything in their life to get there and didn't get there. And, you know, and the movie itself is quite emotional because you seriously feel sorry for these guys, right? Because if these guys had any of the same opportunities that we have in North America, there'd be no, you know, no question. Now, they might not be the best players, but there's no question that they would get their opportunities to at least prove themselves. And I think, you know, we should pat ourselves on the back for being North American, that we have the opportunity to give us ourselves those opportunities.
Yeah, I think we'll leave segment one there. That was a good discussion, I felt. If, let us know your thoughts. You can tweet us directly at Kamal Hilton or at ENB Sports. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Hop onto the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page, and you can find this podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast Network and FatsRadio.com. But in segment two, I'm going to let you lead off with this one about the football manager.
Okay, yeah, sure. There's some background to this story, right? Part of the background to the story is there was a company called Prozone, who were one of the originators in analytics and statistics and recording data via video cameras for games and stuff like that. And arguably, you know, I don't want to speak necessarily for them, but arguably the industry has transferred a bit from what they were doing, so they have less of an impact. So what they did is they publicly announced that they're teaming up with a video game called Football Manager, which is a simulation football game where you can pick a player. It's like FIFA, except you don't play the games. You just do all the management kind of stuff. And it's quite popular in England and stuff like that. And they're basically saying that they're going to use the ratings on the game in their evaluation. And you know, my only hesitance, you know, I think it's funny, number one, personally, right? Like that we've gone to this level that we're now going to video games for information, right? When realistically, statistics are publicly available. You know, information, like if you search, you can get the information you're looking for. But the other thing is you know, and this is very nerdy on my behalf, but if you go back, and you could probably get a copy, if you go back and you play FIFA Manager 10 or FIFA Manager 9, and you see the players develop to the current day, who they predicted would be the big stars today, you'll laugh. You know, I remember, I think it's FIFA 07, and our guy Elmer, who was with Toronto FC last year, was an academy player for Chelsea at that time, and was projecting the game to be a 90 player, better than Drogba, better than you know, better than all of these stars, because you know, EA Sports had no clue, right? And so they just said, okay, we'll randomly give this guy good stats, and as the game develops, his stats will increase, and he'll become this great player and stuff like that. So I do, and then I think one of the problems is, and again, you know, don't want to reveal too many secrets and stuff, but one of the problems with a lot of these industry things is that what you see in the press releases is a lot different than what you see behind the scene and stuff like that, right? And so to trust, quote, scouts for the video game to be proper scouts, I think would be, you know, I think you'd have a concern over that and you would question that, right?
Yeah, that's kind of where I have an issue or...
Just to pass it to you, like, imagine the same thing was done with basketball. Yeah. Like, you're playing NBA Jam, and that's how you pick your draft players and stuff like that, right?
It just seems like a cheap way to get wherever you're trying to get out of this game. Like, why would, instead of paying guys like you a salary to properly manage and think of these things... You're going to pay, what, $70 to buy a video game?
Well, that's the other thing. It's a double fault, right? Because number one, as I said, the stats company is not what it once was. But even the video game, right? One of the problems with these video games is they develop a platform for the video game, and all they can do each year is add new players, right? Because especially with that video game, there's no video play, right? So the game is static, right? And so if you play FIFA Football Manager 2001, and Football Manager 2014, there's slight differences, but for mostly the engine is static, right? So it's press for them, right? It's like, look at how important we are that scouts are actually using us to, and you know, and the funny thing, I don't know if you read the article, but the developer of the game even said that. We knew for years people was using our games to scout. Right? It belittles the, as you, I think what you're about to say, it belittles the whole process, right?
Yeah, that and also, I would have to think there's some kind of sponsorship deal in place. Like, putting Football Manager out there, Football Manager, yeah. There's got to be some sort of sponsorship.
Football Manager, it's a Sega game, and it's a big game, right? Like, in the UK, it's not huge here, right? I think they tried to make an American version. It sucks. They did the MLS. They have no clue of MLS values of MLS players. So whoever's doing it, don't scout MLS through this. No, it's a big entity in England. There's a lot of kids and a lot of young people and a lot of adults who play the game and have an obsession with the game. So, you know, but as I said, it would be like taking FIFA or taking NBA Jam or taking MLB and saying, that's how we're going to judge players now. Instead of going out and scouting players, instead of evaluating players. We're going to play a video game and see the player in the video game, and that's how we're going to pick them, right? And, you know, it was funny because there is, you know, I know we are doing a European soccer podcast, and I don't think this will become a story until we get really run out of topics, but there's some wacky people in the States. I mean, wacky people in the UK, and there has been stories where a guy bought a team and then picked players because his kid was playing FIFA and said this was the players you need to buy because I was playing FIFA Czech League and this guy rocks. So now, arguably, what, you know, just to give it some credence, what FIFA does is they do go to local people and say, what do you think of your players? What do you think of your team and stuff like that? So at a minor evaluation point, I do think there is a bit of value, but to make it, to claim it's a, you know, a scouting tool is complete, you know, ridiculousness in my view.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know, to me, it undermines the work that guys like you do for teams to actually consider going to a Football Manager video game.
Yeah. Now, arguably, and you know, I've had conversations, if they were speaking, they could say the opposite. They could say, why is this guy collecting stats no more about a player than I do, right? You know, at least we have people at the game telling us what players are doing, right? So, you know, you could argue, you know, that's a, you know, argument on its own. And so, you know, not to necessarily include myself in the circle, but again, as I said, you know, not to reiterate, but if it was baseball, like if Billy Beane told you, oh, the reason I know I made these trades is because I played MLB baseball and this is what I did and they won the championship, right? It's and it's a problem because one of the problems I have is a lot of the work I do seems frivolous. And you know, so what I'm trying to do is not justify it, but say there's credence to my work. And so when people make it more goofy, it's harder for me to protect in terms of what I'm saying and stuff like that.
But the final topic that I think we want to get to is something that came to me when I was just scouring Twitter or whatever. There are graphic designers that were making NBA and MLB themed soccer jerseys.
Yeah.
Like with different designs. So there's the NBA one, they had all the teams had their own soccer kit, and the sponsor was the sponsor of the arena and all that stuff. The Toronto Raptors one interested me. I like it.
And the Toronto Bank sponsored Boston. I hope people know TD stands for Toronto Dominion. It's like the BPL where it's Barclays and not British. And, you know, I think people are completely... But yeah, anyway, sorry.
But yeah, what kind of interested me about that is that jersey, I would wear that jersey an MLS game and an NBA game all the same because I'm a soccer fan and an NBA.
Well, I'll tell you straight up, I'm a little short on the hair department, and so I bust hats all the time, right? And I have 50 or 60 hats, and I bust New Era hats, as most hopefully will mention, and they'll give me some free stuff. But, you know, imagine EPL New Era hats. Like, come on. Right? You know, now it's funny because, and again, hopefully I can know the story. But in England, they passed a new law called Hoodlum Law or something like that. And so if you're actually wearing a New Era hat in London on the street, that you're open to an investigation because they think you're causing trouble. So they don't necessarily agree with our rap culture and our gear clothes and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I saw that. I saw your link because I think you post on Twitter or Facebook. I thought they were really cool. And you know, it's interesting you brought up this topic because just like EPL and soccer in general, it does a lot of things very, very well, right? But they're unaware of American marketing. And what's made baseball and basketball so successful is that marketing department, is that stat department, is that product department. And certainly, you know, it's an endless game with soccer, and soccer could certainly benefit greatly from going into that industry. And likewise, as you said, because in this case it was NBA jerseys and soccer jerseys. And yeah, I do think that if the NBA, you know, or league sort of, you know, did some merging or cross marketing, I think it would be very good.
And also, I think if you flip it around, like if you made MLS branded hockey jerseys or basketball jerseys or whatever, it would help bring in more fans to MLS that are more casual fans.
Yeah.
But that is what you're targeting as a league. You're not targeting hardcore.
Yeah, one of the issues, and again, because I get to mention it again, is that MLS is tied up with corporate brands. So MLS has a, I think they're part owners of the league, actually. MLS has a close relationship with Adidas. So it's not, you know, the one benefit of other sports is you have multiple brands trying to compete in that industry. Where with MLS, it has exclusivity with Adidas. So unless Adidas decides that they want to take these things forward, you'll never see them, right? And so it does, you know, it gives you a sense of free market and you know, and corporatism, right? You know.
But Adidas could do that.
Adidas
is in basketball.
Sure.
They can have MLS-branded basketball jerseys or whatever. Adidas, I think that's a smart, I think they should seriously consider that.
Yeah.
A, you would get me wearing hockey stuff, which I never do. So, I mean, if you're interested in getting me into hockey gear, that's a way to go about it. But I think you target a fan base, a section of a fan base that you're actually trying to bring in because they'd be willing to spend more money on merchandise and stuff, even though they're not diehard soccer fans.
Yeah, and I would just tell Adidas to improve the structure of your hat, and then because I think they do have MLS hats, but Adidas does not make good hats. So,
but yeah, I think that's a good way to end the pod. Let us know your thoughts on any of these topics, whether it is the playing the percentages topic, the rags to riches storyline, the football manager deal, or this cross branding topic. You can tweet us directly at Kamau Hilton and at EMB Sports. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Hop onto the Gaffron Hooligan Facebook page and find the podcast on War Room Sports Podcast Network and FatsRadio.com. I don't know if you're working on it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that we have two upcoming, quite exciting podcasts that you can talk about as well. But we're doing a college podcast, which I think we promised a couple of times because NCAA Division I and CIS college soccer is beginning early September. And we've also thought about doing a Mexican League podcast because the Mexican League, because, you know, we do represent CONCACAF and the Mexican League. It's already started. They've already played a couple of games, but this is the beginning of Apertura. And teams are playing in the Canadian or in the CONCACAF Champions League, so we thought it'd be a good thing to talk about one day.
Yeah, the college one is a good one because I think I mentioned before it'll have some League One Ontario.
Yeah, there's players, a number of Canadian guys in it.
Yeah, that we've already talked about. Some we might not have talked about that we want to get into more detail on. And with the Mexican one, we have some fellow podcast friends down in San Diego that cover Liga MX primarily.
Yeah,
so we'd try and get them on to give us a different perspective.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on Liga MX. I do statistics for Liga MX and I have done for a number of years and I certainly watch the games with interest, but to have an expert's opinion would certainly be beneficial as well.
Yeah, so we'll have that one and we'll also have our new European Gaffron Hooligan pod that we're gonna record.
You can hear me in my British accent.
And that'll cover European soccer, but kind of the same slant we do here, looking at it from a North American.
Yeah. It's basically just to, you know, it's interesting because I think with the MLS work, we're probably more detailed and advanced than most, and it's not a slight to other podcasts, than most podcasts and stuff, because, you know, I think the MLS fan who's an avid fan is at that level of intelligence. And I think with the, you know, we're not dumbing down the Europod, but we're do giving a a North American perspective. So, you know, things that, and, you know, we're certainly open to ideas for topics, but things that, you know, might seem funny because it's taking place in a different place. You know, we'll break those down and discuss them, and it should be very interesting.
And that one will be found exclusively on the War Room Sports Podcast Network. But before we go, be sure to check out the other brands within the RNO family of podcasts. Eastside Stand Up with Ian Clark has you covered for all things TFC. Steve Botcher provides the RNO interview series with key figures within the game. The guys at From the Black Hole, Rob, Jeff, and Lars, bring their unique style of coverage to Canadian soccer. And Ours is the Fury podcast, gives you everything about the Ottawa Fury and NASL. You have a Ottawa Fury.
Yeah, I do. I'm basically just an account of how the season's going and what they should do looking into next year.
But yeah, so look out for that, and we might talk about that down the line as well. Until next time, guys, cheers.
Cheers.